Hello and welcome to episode 10 of season 10 of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss a little website called OMG Ubuntu. We'll also have some GUI love and go over your feedback. My name's Joey and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello.
Mark.
Hello, hello.
And Martin.
Hello, Joey.
Hello. Is this the part where we discuss what we've been up to recently, yeah?
Yes.
That's exactly what we do.
Let's do that.
Martin, what have you been up to?
This is so seamless. Me, I have been pirating audio from an Android app.
Ooh, ah.
But don't tell anyone. It's just the four of us, isn't it?
Did you do what I did and plug the headphone jack into the microphone jack on your laptop and then play it all night while recording in Audacity?
A bit like that, yeah. Wow. So plugging the phone into my audio interface and then taking a recording off that audio interface. And this is because there's an app, I won't give the app name, but there's an app that my daughter needed for school to teach her times tables. And we wanted to be able to play it in the car on one of those old-fashioned CD players. So I've been ripping the audio off of this application and then converting them into MP3s and CDs so we can play it in steam-powered in-car entertainment systems.
Is that technically illegal?
I don't think so.
You're not sharing it.
No, I'm not sharing it. And I have paid for the app that I am ripping this audio out of. So I think it falls under a fair use.
Except for the fact that we don't have fair use.
Yeah, I know. I'm just glossing over that little technical detail.
I don't think anyone would actually prosecute you for it.
You wouldn't have thought so. I mean, it's an educational tool and I'm trying to use it to make sure my daughter can access the content more often.
Well, technically bong making equipment is educational. I don't think you can use that as a get out in the courts.
Oh, well. Okay. Well, fortunately it's just the four of us. Nobody else knows, so it's fine. What have you been up to, Alan?
I have been getting annoyed at the loudness of my desktop PC. And I posted online, hey, how can I make my desktop PC quieter? And a few suggestions were you should go water cooling and you should, you know, upgrade everything and all this. And I was like, no. I want the cheapest, simplest way to make this thing shut up because it's too noisy. Like the fan is just, and there's more than one fan in the thing, obviously.
Yeah.
So, and there's noise coming from various places.
This is not a small desktop computer then?
Yeah, it's a mini tower thing, the kind of thing that sits on the desk on the floor. Right. One of the suggestions that I was given was if you just briefly put your finger on the fan that's spinning on top of the CPU and just stop it, you'll soon know where the noise was coming from, because if you just stop it momentarily and the noise stops, then you know it was coming from that fan. And I hadn't thought to do that. That was a real simple diagnostic thing to do, is just like put my finger on it. Sure enough, that's where the noise was coming from. So I ordered a new gigantic Cooler Master fan and heatsink thing, and I put it in there tonight, and it is now so much quieter. I also blew out all the dust bunnies and everything outside, so I got a can of compressed air and blew out all the dust.
Was that absolutely so hideous?
Quieter. It wasn't like super gross. It was pretty gross. I mean,
it's amazing how much stuff they suck in, isn't it?
It's a few years worth of, you know, dead skin. Nice. So it's not the most pleasant thing in the world, sure.
Fortunately, not dead food, which we know Laura has an aversion to.
Well, I would not be surprised if there was some dead food in there.
Laura will be turning off.
Yeah. No, there's all good. Yeah, but it's much quieter now.
Good.
So I'm happier. But the weird thing was I put it all back together again, and this heatsink thing is like a big vertical thing with a fan on the side of it, which one of these fans that's controlled, so it only blows slowly and so it doesn't make a huge amount of noise. But the top of the heatsink fouls the case. So I was put it all back together again, and as soon as I put the side on the side of the computer, it started nudging the heatsink. So like, brilliant. Marvellous. So yeah,
great. I have to hammer it out a bit.
I think I might have to do that. Yes. Should we get on with it?
Let's.
And now we're going to talk about a little website called OMG Ubuntu.
Oh dear.
Now, you may or may not know, but our guest this week, Jerry Sneddon, is the editor-in-chief of OMG Ubuntu. So, Jerry.
I am, yes. Hello.
What is OMG Ubuntu?
OMG Ubuntu is a tabloid, a very trashy Linux tabloid that runs all sorts of... No, it's primarily an Ubuntu-focused news site and kind of online magazine with lots of different things, how-tos, tips, apps, reviews, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's been going a long time now.
Yeah, so my first release of Ubuntu was 7.10 in about March, just before 8.4, and I think 8.10, sorry, was the first version that I blogged about. The what was it? Intrepid Ibix, is that right?
That's right. About then, yeah.
Yeah, so pretty much solidly since then I've been writing about Ubuntu.
And what, so, you know, one day you install an operating system, the next day you're writing a blog about it.
Yeah,
what prompted that?
Yeah, people kind of assume I set out to create a blog, but I didn't. It just kind of happened organically. I was using Ubuntu, and back then, you know, you had to kind of jump through a lot of hoops to get things like Wi-Fi working or decent battery life on whatever crummy netbook you had. And so the blog just started purely as a way for me to log these things that I had to do next time I fresh installed, because I used to distro hop like mad. And that's it. Kind of, people started reading and commenting, and it just kind of really grew from there. There was never set out to create some giant news site.
So those initial blogs, were they under the banner of OMG Ubuntu, or was it something else?
It was under a far worse acronym, to be fair. I used to, like, when I sort of got interested in Ubuntu, I used to, my whole gambit, like a lot of people, I used to like dual booting with Windows and Open Solaris and Linux and anything else I could literally get up and running. So the aim was to kind of write about all these different things, but I just soon focused on Ubuntu because it worked best.
Okay. And have you ever considered, I know you've got a few domains. Have you considered just, you know, stopping writing about Ubuntu and writing about something else? Has anything else taken your fancy?
Yeah, like it's crossed my mind. Like a lot of people assume I'm kind of, you know, this rather shrewd person who writes for clicks and chases traffic or whatever. But it's like, that's not it at all. Like, I'm quite shy and insecure, and the more people read what I do, the more I worry, because that's more people you're potentially annoying or who are going to tell you that you're doing a really rubbish job. So Ubuntu as a niche obviously isn't, in the grand scheme of things, the biggest niche I could be writing about. I could be writing about Android, but honestly, Ubuntu is the one with it's kind of the most exciting and varied, and it's what I really like writing about. So it's easier to write about it.
Has that changed over time? Like, I think it's right to say that you've gone in flurries. Sometimes there'll be a flurry of articles, and some there'll be a quiet period for whatever reason. Is there any, like, underlying reason for that, or is it just, you know, creative difficulty? And
yeah, kind of the creative tides kind of wax and wane with Ubuntu releases, really, because obviously in the middle of a release cycle there's lots to write about, but just after a release there's not that much to write about, and PPAs haven't been updated and people haven't updated their apps to support new features and that kind of thing. But yeah, my interest in Ubuntu has kind of dipped at times. I wasn't a particularly big fan of the whole convergence diversion. I kind of felt it was a little bit don't know how to word it correctly, but I felt it was perhaps, you know, maybe a little bit off course, shall we say. Right. And, you know,
alone in saying that. I mean, there's plenty of people who say, why are they doing this? Why didn't they just stick with the desktop? You know, they've they've spent, you know, millions possibly, and, you know, huge amounts of man hours developing this thing that is now dead, and they could have been making, you know, Ubuntu better in the desktop.
And from a blogging perspective, it's kind of weird because that stuff's exciting, right? It's all new. It's lots going on. There should be lots to write about, but it kind of, at the same time, Canonical sort of started this Skunk Works initiative, which it was developing less in the open and more sort of behind closed doors, and then only announcing stuff when it was ready because they got a lot of heat from the whole introducing Unity too early. And that made it harder for people like me to kind of see what's new and write about stuff, which kind of trickles on down. Then readers see what's new and they know there's a kind of momentum. So with Unity 8 and the Ubuntu phone, there was kind of none of that. There was a kind of no roller coaster to ride through the development process because stuff just kind of popped out.
You mentioned the, you know, it's difficult when stuff is done behind closed doors and like private projects, and they want, you know, there was certainly an element of wanting a big hurrah when there was a marketing push behind something to get a lot of press news cycle around a, you know, the phone or the Ubuntu TV or whatever. But you still managed to get like interesting scoops, like, you know, whether it's following the right developer and following bugs that were accidentally public and stuff like that. Does most of it come from you hunting stuff down, or do people just come to you with
it's
stuff?
Kind of like an 80-20 split, like 80% it's me out there sifting through stuff, trying to find stuff to write, stuff that's vaguely interesting that people are going to care about. And like most of what I come across, you know, is just mindless irrelevance. It's just, they're just mailing list posts, you know, just noise.
Yeah. That's right. News everywhere else, Joe. You're missing it.
Maybe I'm covering the wrong things.
No, I don't think so. I think repeating mailing list posts is just, it's rubbish.
I kind of forgot what I was saying.
Sorry.
Yeah,
so you get some from like your looking around, and some of it kind of comes, people come to you with tidbits of information.
Yeah, like a lot of developers, particularly in the open source community, know they're always looking for ways for people to know they've made an app and that they can do whatever with it. So they come to me, and then obviously there are people who are involved in certain things that go on at Canonical or Ubuntu or... and they, you know, I get pointed in the right direction sometimes. So
and do you, some of those things that, you know, people tell you about, are you ever brutally honest with them and go, no, that's not interesting. I'm not going to write about that.
I just kind of defer to silence. I just
right. Okay. Interesting. It's funny because there's certain profile of articles that you see on OMG, you know, you always know there's going to be something about the wallpaper contest. You always know, you know, if there's a change to the font or there's some other visual change, that will be well represented. Whereas some technicality of some protocol change, you're just not going to write about that stuff, right?
No, because I tend to stick to, like I said before, I'm not very confident about what I write. Like, you know, people might think that being behind a news site that, you know, a large-ish amount of people read, that I'm kind of confident in what I'm writing, but I'm not. And I certainly don't like to cover things that I don't feel like I would be informing my readers enough about it. I would kind of prefer to leave it to other people to cover who probably have a bit more expertise and, understanding it, and also it's also passion. Like the visual changes and things are things that I'm genuinely interested in, like design and UX and UI and stuff. So it's easier for me to kind of get some pep up about it when I'm writing about these things than, you know, a version change in a toolkit that, you know, I didn't know existed.
And do you find that there's particular topics which your readers are particularly keen on as well?
Oh, yeah. Like, I call them notes. There are certain notes I can hit that I know will go down very well with readers. And I sometimes I'm not sure whether, like, my readers genuinely share the same interests as me or whether I've, like, curated a readership around the things that I'm interested in. But, yeah, there are things like... that always do well, that people are very interested in reading about, like new apps. People love new apps. They, mm-hmm. They're all about the new apps, and unless they're Electron. themes, like people love themes. People like to tweak. Like Linux users tend to be quite independent and intelligent, and always looking for different things to try and do on their own systems.
And you mentioned comments on your site. Have you always had comments enabled on
your
site?
We have, yes.
And has the way you managed that changed over time?
Yes. No, On the whole, I still manage comments in the same way, which is I ignore them until I don't have to, until I have to. But I think, like, discourse on the internet fell off a cliff, right? Like, a couple years back, like, if you disagreed with a blog post, you'd write a really long reply in their comment section detailing why you disagree with it, whereas now you just kind of leave an expletive and move on. And like, that's been quite difficult for me to deal with, because I'm quite a an emotional and sensitive person. Like, I don't like argy-bargy or controversy, and I certainly don't like upsetting people or misleading people or whatever. So it can get a bit much. So there are things I've had to do, like turn on link moderation, because a lot of people like to drop inappropriate links in comments when they're telling me that I'm not very good. Things like that. Yeah.
You've been talking about, you know, what you write and the notes that you hit. So as editor, are you the principal content creator at OMG?
I am, which is kind of to a detriment in some respect, because it can be really hard to get a discipline around what you're writing. You know, sometimes it's just easier to knock out a couple of posts about GTK themes because A, you know, people will be interested, but also because they're very, very easy to write. So there are topics I avoid or skirt around covering that I know I have to because they're relevant to the audience, but that are difficult. Like recently, obviously, with the whole Unity news, like people's jobs are affected by this, right? And you know, I've been passed links and emails from now disgruntled former employees, you know, who kind of want me to post them. But at the same time, I don't, because it's not the right forum for that kind of stuff.
It is difficult. And seeing the fact that your colleagues and for you external to Canonical, I'm sure you have friends in Canonical who are in difficult positions now. And you know, if people start feeding you this information, it can be tempting to, you know, publish that kind of stuff. But I think,
but it has an effect. There's this is humans. This isn't just clicks.
It's not just code.
This, no.
So what does an average day look like for you when you're writing? How do you go about sourcing your material and actually, you know,
I can't give
together?
Away all my secrets.
Well, you know all of ours after tonight.
As well. So I get up about 9 a.m. and I work from about 10:30 till about 11 at night, scouring and writing and trying and waffling. Lots of waffling.
And how many articles do you queue up in advance, or do you post as you complete?
I post as I go along normally. There are a couple of things that obviously with release dates, like I know there's going to be a release of Ubuntu, so when I'm kind of creatively stumped elsewhere, I can kind of start prepping that. But by and large, I just kind of post as I go, which is why there are so many typos.
Have you considered having, I mean, you have in the past had other people who contribute as well. There's like a few names pop in my mind that have...
Well, John O'Bacon wrote a couple of posts. We had John O'Bacon. Yeah. We had like David Holback, Daniel Planella, Michael Hall, George Castro, you know, like big names in the world.
Also,
Ubuntu,
I mean,
you know?
I mean, people from outside of Canonical as well. Yeah. Like, you know,
Nixie Pixel.
Yeah. Benjamin and Sam, I think, and some others. But have you ever considered, like, again, more recently, have you considered, you know, taking on staff, as it were?
If I could afford to, I would. But like in theory, yes, because that kind of lowers my work burden. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to like it's easy to look at OMG Ubuntu and just see a brand around a certain kind of content. But for me, it's kind of my personal blog. It's where I, you know, like I say, I started it just blogging things for me. So it's kind of hard to cede control or start having to factor in, you know, managing other people's writing to make sure it doesn't go across awry, which has happened in the past. Like, I have given
have
some people
controversial posts once in a while. Yes, yes, but that's in the past, so that's fine. So you're not only are you editing the stuff, you're also managing the site and, you know, doing all your software update. You still have to do all of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean on the server side or?
Yeah.
No, we have managed WordPress hosting, so it's all taken care of.
I remember in the very in the dim and distant past, there was, you know, it was on a
VPS. Oh, we used to wrestle. Yes,
it was hard work, wasn't it? Now yeah, and then we outsource that and not worry about it.
Basically, yes, because those aren't my strengths. You know, I'm not, and that's reflected in the content you see on the site. Like, you don't see a lot of server stuff or how to run your LAMP stack, whatever.
Yeah, there are different sites covering that, and I think that you own the niche of sort of desktop Ubuntu, really, don't you?
So what's the future hold for Gubuntu?
Good question.
More GNOME-related articles, I suspect.
More GNOME-related articles, yes. Like, there are certain things that I mean, I really want to get back to doing interviews and things, because I kind of like spotlighting people behind the code that we write about. Right. And just more of highlighting community stuff as well. Like, I really love it when communities around projects, even if not distros, you know, kind of use me as like a bulletin board. I kind of like that. I like being useful for other people as well as just me.
Awesome. Well, it's been lovely talking to you, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us about OMG Ubuntu. It's been very interesting.
It's been very awkward to talk about it. I'm really shy, and like I don't like to blow my own trumpet, so it's very difficult.
Oh, you.
I like compliments, though. Like, I love compliments. So
we'll
feel
forward
free.
Them all to you.
Thank
we'll
you.
Forward them all
on. That gooey love. If there's an app that you've been using that you just have to tell everyone about, email your gooey love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Well, how convenient, because this week we do indeed have some gooey love. My GUI love this week is Sound Converter.
What does that do?
Well, it does what it says on the tin, really. So you shove some audio files into it and tell it what format you want those audio files to come out the other side, and it does it for you. And this is going back to me ripping audio off an Android app. When I dumped them all, they were all FLAX, and I had about a dozen, in fact 11 exactly, audio tracks in FLAC, and I wanted them all in MP3. And one neat thing that Audio Converter does is when you put your 11 things in the queue and hit go, it enumerates how many cores you've got in your system, and it kicks off a conversion thread for each thread capability you've got in your box. So it did 8 and then 3. So it converted these 11 audio files in like 5 seconds. It was amazing. But it's very, very simple to use. It supports just about everything imaginable as input, and it outputs to Opus, Ogg, and FLAC, and WAV, and AAC, and MP3.
Yeah.
So, it's really elegant, very simple. We'll have a link to the site. It's soundconverter.org, I think, the website.
Yeah, and it's in apt as well.
Yeah, just apt installed.
But I also
Converter.
Use it. I
Is
use
there
it
Snap?
I was going to ask.
Do you know what? I haven't actually looked, but I don't think so.
Yeah,
but they
I use it, to, it for putting music in my car, because my I can put stuff on an SD card and stick it in the stereo in my car, but it has to for some reason it sorts stuff by the file name, which means I need to have everything first of all converted to MP3 because I have it all in FLAC on my server, but also to get it to be in the order that I want, I have to name it with like the album first and then the artist name, which isn't how I store it because that's ridiculous.
Right.
So it means that I can very easily just take a folder full of stuff which I want to play in my car and run it through Sound Converter, and it'll output it onto the SD card in the right format with the right file name.
Yeah.
It's really handy.
Pretty nifty.
Did you know you can come and chat with us and other listeners in between shows? Come and join us in our Telegram group at ubuntupodcast.org/telegram.
And now it is time for all your wonderful feedback. Now, we do read it all, but we don't get the chance to read it all out, I'm afraid. First, we have Ian McKend, who emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
I recently acquired a Lenovo Yoga 300. It's a nice laptop which lacks some power, but Zubuntu runs well on it. Zubuntu 16.04 uses kernel 4.8, which lacks some drivers for this machine, the main one being for power and battery information and management. He read that its kernels can be updated, and he had a look, but he found 4.10.11 from kernel.ubuntu.com. These are the upstream kernels, and installed that.
Mainly.
Yeah. After a reboot, battery tools were working in the XFCE taskbar, so that's good. He's done some extensive testing, and everything seems to work well on the hardware. Yet another win for Linux, he says.
So the kernels on kernel.ubuntu.com, do they have the Ubuntu patches installed, or are they just packaged?
They are plain upstream kernels. So there's a bit of a problem there, because anything that we've patched in to enable stuff in Ubuntu won't be there.
Right.
So some stuff might not work. But they're mainly not there for you to use in that way. It's mainly there for you to debug, like at which point, like for you to do a bisect to say, you know, it stopped working at this point. If I install this kernel, which is three revisions back, you know, it worked and it stopped working on this kernel. So you can install lots of different kernels and figure out which one broke it. But, you know, the fact that they're there is useful. So he now knows exactly which kernel he needs to support his like battery or whatever devices. But that also means that he could upgrade to 17.04, which does have the 4.10 kernel, so potentially he could upgrade his distro to get those benefits as well.
When the Skylake IGP implementation had all those bugs in the power rail that caused the screens to flicker, I was using the mainline kernels for some months to work around those issues. Right, next up, Neil McPhail also emailed us.
Such a delight to hear Emma back. She will be a great addition to the regular team. With regards to Mark Shuttleworth's recent pronouncements on the desktop, I must admit I'm worried about the future for my favourite desktop operating system. Over the past couple of years, the desktop release has taken a less prominent role on the main Ubuntu webpage in various press releases. Last year, when pressed on whether he was still excited about the Ubuntu desktop, Mark said he was excited by Unity 8 on the desktop. Those of us who followed the phone and Unity 8 closely will have witnessed that excitement diminishing and extinguishing over the past 12 months. His decision to switch to stock upstream GNOME shell suggests his desktop excitement may not have been rekindled elsewhere. So I think it's going to fall on us as the Ubuntu community to shape the Ubuntu GNOME experience into something viable and worthwhile. We're probably going to be exposed to the first iteration of the new canonical version in 17.10. I'm sure many of us would like to test, explore, tweak and submit bugs and patches. Would it be better for Canonical to support 16.10 a bit longer than usual to allow us to make the switch nearer the release date for 17.10? That will allow LTS users like me to stay on the most stable release until the time comes to volunteer for bug reporting duty.
Wow, there's a lot of stuff to cover there. The first thing I'd just like to add is something we neglected to mention a couple of episodes ago, is there are still some conversations going about how Ubuntu and GNOME are going to be implemented as an official flavour. And the Ubuntu Desktop Manager will be coming on the podcast to explain what those plans are when they've been firmed up a little bit. Joey, are you excited about the switch too?
I am incredibly optimistic about it. Like the first time I heard the news, I was, like everyone else, a bit shocked. But I think there's a real opportunity to kind of redefine what Ubuntu on desktop in 2017, 18 really looks like. And I've been playing with a lot of GNOME extensions. There are a lot of different possibilities available for doing that. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm optimistic. This is a good thing, I think.
Cool. Will left a comment on our website.
He did. I was hoping to hear that Popey and Wimpy's jobs were unaffected by the change in strategy at Canonical. I hope that this is the case. Neither seem to work directly on Unity, but I don't know the structure of Canonical well enough to know which jobs are affected by the changes.
Thank you.
No comment?
Not right now.
Not right now. Chris Zimmerman also commented.
A short message to HeyCitizen and BlamePopey.com. Why not make this the official podcast theme? But just in case, keep the day job for now.
I don't know what he's talking about. No.
Ishmael Musgrave tweeted us at Ubuntu Podcast.
With these post-show specials, you are spoiling us. Oh, ambassador. Thanks, and keep up the sterling work.
Robert Hotchkiss emailed us.
I live in Ubuntu. My whole workflow is arranged around it. I waited with bated breath for the Ubuntu podcast. Brits might not be ones for recognizing dodginess, but I have grown dependent upon your calmness. If the world was going to come to an end, I would stream the BBC, because no matter how bad things get, the calm news readers at the BBC always make things seem less bad. Unfortunately, your podcast did not reassure me.
Oh, dear.
Is Ubuntu dead for desktop users like myself who depend on it for years? I have grown accustomed to Unity, and I have been anxiously waiting on Ubuntu phone, but losing Unity seems like an inconvenience. What I'm terrified about is the lack of point of focus for Linux desktop computing. I'm generally sorry for the turmoil that those of you at work at Canonical must be going through, but if you're able, please provide more reason for those of us in the community to hope for the future of desktop Linux computing.
Well, I think Joey's comments just did that.
Yeah, like the return of Ubuntu to the kind of GNOME fold is going to put a lot more eyeballs on GNOME Shell and help inform and shape the direction that that takes. So I think the future of desktop Linux computing has probably never looked brighter now that Ubuntu's kind of back behind it.
Yep. And Robert, we'll do what we can to allay your fears in a future episode. And finally, the Atoms emailed us with some virtual private love, which we have safely deposited in the vault of love.
What on earth?
I know, sorry.
Well, that's it for episode 10, but we'll be back next week when we'll have more news, comment, and discussion.
Excellent. Thank you for being here, Joey.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm sorry I stammer a lot.
You've done a sterling job.
So I will edit that out.
We've been told we and ah all the time anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You fit in.
Joey, will you come back maybe in the future episode?
I would absolutely love to, if you'll have me back.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
See you soon.
Bye.
Love me tender, love me sweet, never let me go. You have made my life complete, and I love you so. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I always will.